This is 89.9 WWNO. Yes, we're headed for another art-filled week. Are you making plans, or do you need some ideas? Well, you've come to the right place. Whether you're in the mood for contemporary ballet with a spot of comedy, a creative art contest, or a spooky Halloween stage drama, it's all in the mixed media. Come along as we go inside the arts. Hi, I'm your host, Diane Mack. The Marigny Opera Ballet opens its fifth season with the premiere of Follies of 1915. The full-length comedy of errors is set to period music by the new Leviathan Oriental Foxtrot Orchestra. Artistic director Dave Hurlburt is here to talk about what is perhaps a first for the award-winning contemporary ballet company. Dave, welcome back.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Was this a bold move for the company to merge comedy and ballet in a full-length work?
I think it's a pretty bold move. We've never done a full-length comedy before. In fact, I don't believe there are a whole lot of full-length comedies in the whole canon of ballet or modern dance. We have done tragedies in the past, very nicely, I think, Orfeo, Giselle Deland. But putting together a full-length ballet that actually entertains and, we hope, something that makes people laugh, has been a stretch for us. And a gamble. I'm looking forward to opening night, and I hope there will be laughter at the Marigny Opera House.
What was the inspiration for this work, Follies of 1915?
About a year ago, I had lunch with Ricky Graham, local producer, man of all talents, actor, director, and I enlisted his help. I didn't know how to come up with a scenario that was going to be funny for a full length. So we brainstormed. And Ricky recommended taking a look at Twelfth Night, Shakespeare, which I hadn't read or seen probably since high school or college. So I reread the play and at first thought it would be too difficult. It's so verbal and it relies on subtleties that would be very difficult to express without words, plot elements. So it was a matter of thinning down the plot so that it could be portrayed by 10 people on stage without words. Ricky and I worked on it pretty assiduously for a while, and I think we narrowed it down to something that's very clear, very funny, and we decided to set it in 1915. The reason for that is because in 1915, a dance craze swept the United States. Everybody was taking dancing lessons. People were going to tea dances, to dance halls. This was the rise of Vernon and Irene Castle, who were international superstars, ballroom dancers. It was the beginning of Fred Astaire. Fred and his sister Adele used to entertain by dancing. The foxtrot was introduced and made popular. So was the tango, the castle walk, the two-step. A whole lot of dances were born during that period. And it was a very exciting period musically. We had ragtime, we had early jazz, we had vaudeville, operetta, all of these wonderful music traditions coming together. And the costumes would be great. So we went ahead to set it, and we were going to commission an original score for the ballet until I realized that one huge resource is sitting right here in our backyard, the new Leviathan Oriental Foxtrot Orchestra. They're an amazing group, and this is exactly the kind of music they do. There are all kinds of numbers. There are tangos, there are foxtrots, there are polkas, big waltzes. Everything across the spectrum of dance of the period. The actual ballet will be accompanied by a 15-member ensemble of the new Leviathan Oriental Foxtrot Orchestra.
Now, let's talk about the scenario.
Keeping in mind it's a comedy, the plot centers around two identical twins, Violet and her brother Vincent. Now, I know that's physically impossible, but in this case, that is what they are. They're on a steamship heading to New Orleans. They encounter a terrible storm. The ship begins to sink. The twins say goodbye forever and leap into the water. Now, that's the end of scene one. From there, Violet has adventures, misadventures, posing as a gigolo, working at an elegant dance hall, doing all of the dances of the period. There are romantic intrigues. She ends up in jail. And there's a happy ending for everyone.
There's a lot going on there. Tell us a little bit about the dancers and how they reacted and adapted to the concept of doing comedic work.
I always thought our dancers had good senses of humor. I mean, just from watching them in company class or at parties. But they'd never had a chance to express it. In this case, they were right on it. I myself am laughing at each rehearsal, at the excesses these dancers go to.
Did the work prove to be testing for your choreographer?
Kellis McSparron-Oldenburg is the choreographer for the piece. She's done two ballets for us in the past, both shorter. Doing a full-length ballet for the first time is hard on anyone. What you have to do is make the plot clear. So there's a lot of storytelling. It's more difficult than abstract dance, and it's certainly more difficult than a typical 20-minute piece. You've got to keep the arc going, keep the audience interested, and pace the thing so that it makes a rich and rewarding 1.5 hours. Kellis entered the Marigny Opera House day one, fully prepared. I think she actually had the whole ballet in her head the day she started. Kellis is doing a remarkable job. Every single part of the plot is clear.
How do you think local audiences will react to this bold comedic ballet?
I think New Orleans audiences are going to love this ballet because it's like a big New Orleans party. We have dance music from the New Leviathan Oriental Foxtrot Orchestra. And what we have is a constantly entertaining parade of outrageous characters on stage in all kinds of romantic situations. In fact, the whole ballet takes place the day before Mardi Gras. So there is some actual Mardi Gras costuming in the very last scene. I don't think it gets more New Orleans than this. I really don't.
Dave Herbert, Artistic Director of the Marigny Opera Ballet. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Diane.
The Marigny Opera Ballet presents its season opener, Follies of 1915, with performances running November 1st through 4th at the Marigny Opera House, 725 St. Ferdinand Street. More info at marignyoperahouse.org. In the interest of full disclosure, I am a member of the Marigny Opera House Foundation Board. Here's a heads up for aspiring young artists. If you are a Louisiana high school junior or senior, Blue Dog artist George Rodriguez Foundation of the Arts is hoping you'll enter its annual visual arts competition. In fact, the foundation would like you to search the galaxy for creative ideas for a winning entry that could lead to a college scholarship. Jacques Rodriguez is the son of the late Cajun artist George Rodriguez and executive director of the foundation. He joins us by phone. Hello, Jacques.
Hello, how are we doing today?
Hey, pretty good. You know, contests are always exciting. How are you honoring your dad's legacy with this contest?
You know, Dad always said that if he wasn't from Louisiana, he probably never would have started painting in the first place.
Oh, my.
So we're trying to inspire that next generation of artists to be creative and to get awards to go to college. And a lot of people think the arts are just about fluff, but all the research shows differently, and people that participate in art contests, you know, can go on to do anything they want in their careers. And so we've had winners that have become lawyers and doctors. And so that creativity and imagination really translates to anything that young students want to do.
So how does the contest work?
Every year we do a call for juniors and seniors across the state of Louisiana to enter. They go to our website, rodriguezfoundation.org, and upload a picture. And this year's themes is really special. It looks at the cosmos. Dad did a lot of imagery and paintings with swirls in them over the years, and he was always questioning, you know, existence, where do we come from, where are we going, even with the Cajuns early on, and then, of course, with the Blue Dog, it was that whole idea of where are we going and what's life all about.
And you have some questions you'd like these young artists to think about when creating their original works?
You know, it's a pretty open and abstract theme, and so we don't want to say too much about what direction to go in. We just want these young minds to let us know about their place in the world and the cosmos and what do they think is important to them right now.
Who's eligible?
Juniors and seniors in high school. It's a total award of $45,000, and they're big awards. So first place is $6,000, second place $5,500, third place $5,000. And over the years, we've awarded over $300,000 in college scholarships to our winners. So it's a great way for us to keep Dad relevant and to make sure that future students understand Dad's impact on the state and how much he loved it, and to inspire them to maybe even have careers of their own in the arts.
What are the artwork requirements?
It's a visual art contest, so it's two-dimensional work. We don't accept photography or sculpture. The size of the works range from 11 by 14 to 18 by 24. And typically we want paintings, pastels, charcoals, graphite, pens. And it's really easy once the artwork is created to just take a picture of it and upload it to our website for judging.
How many finalists do you expect to have?
Typically we get about 700 entries from across the state, and we narrow it down to the top 15 first round finalists. And then what we do is invite those 15 finalists to an award ceremony in New Orleans at the Sheraton Hotel. And it's a really exciting day because everyone knows they've won something, but they don't know exactly what place yet. And so we get to invite the student, their families, their art teacher for a big celebration.
And how many students would you say have been helped by this contest?
Over 100 students over the years have won. It's really fascinating almost 10 years later to see these students and their careers. Some have become visual artists, and we've actually hosted shows for them with their professional work. Some are doctors, lawyers. It's a pretty wide gamut, and it's a big deal for these students to get that confidence that they can do whatever they want. Oftentimes, it's students who have never had an opportunity to even come to New Orleans, and so to bring them in, to open their eyes, and for them to get recognition at this level is really important for them, and to see their families and their art teacher proud of them, it's a really great experience.
Now, you said that not all who win go on to become artists. You talked about lawyers and doctors. What is it about art that helps them to succeed?
You know, I think the key for the next century is going to be imagination and creativity and trying to address problems in a new and interesting way. And if you're just studying to the test, which is trying to understand how to fill out a multiple choice questionnaire, you really don't get that skill set that it takes to understand that a lot of questions don't have just one answer. And so it's really important for these students to realize that they can think of new ideas, and that's what the world is going to need over the next century.
Is there a student or two that sticks out in your mind that you can tell us a story about?
The first winner definitely is my favorite, Sean Hicks. He was a student from Hackberry, Louisiana. He had no plans to go to college. He ended up winning a first-place scholarship, and he was so talented and got to go on to college, and he's a professional artist now, actually in the digital realm, creating video game art. So we're just so proud of him.
When is the deadline to enter?
So the deadline is January 18th, so still have a couple more months, especially over the Christmas holiday break, to get these entries done and send them in. Again, it's really simple. Just take a photo of the work and upload it. Parents, grandparents, teachers, if you have a student in your life that you think may be interested, please encourage them to send us an entry.
Jacques Rodrigue, Executive Director of the George Rodrigue Foundation of the Arts. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
More information on the art contest can be found online at georgerodriguefoundation.org. The deadline to enter, once again, is January 18th. You're listening to Inside the Arts on 89.9 WWNO, New Orleans Public Radio. I'm Diane Mack. A thrilling, dark comedy continues the season for the NOLA Project as it presents playwright Martin McDonagh's The Pillow Man. It's a wicked tale about a fiction writer and his grisly stories set in a police state. Director Mark Ruthier and actors James Bartel and Michael Joel Bartel are here. Welcome.
Thank you so much.
Thanks, Diane.
Just in time for Halloween, should we be afraid of things that go bump in the night in black box theater?
I think that if you're wise, you'll be very afraid.
Very afraid. Tell me, what attracted you to this work?
This is James. I've always been a fan of Martin McDonagh's plays. When I was in high school, I guess, I went into a Barnes & Noble bookstore and I read his play, The Cripple of Inishmon, which was one of the first, you know, big successes that he had. And it ended up being the first play that the NOLA Project produced. And from there, we produced his show, The Lieutenant of Inishmore, A Behanding in Spokane, and now The Pillow Man is the fourth play of his. And it's so twisted and strange, but at the same time, very funny. You have the idea that Martin McDonagh probably was an equal fan of Martin Scorsese films and Laurel and Hardy sketches.
This is Mark. I was able to direct The Lieutenant of Inishmore at the beginning of the season, so this is a lovely bookend for me. And I could tell you more about what inspired him to write that play than I can about this play. I think that he was playing around with the idea of what's real and what's not real and what kind of profound effect literature has on people and how reading something might lead you to act in ways that you might not want to otherwise.
So let's flesh out this wicked plot. Set the stage for us.
This is Michael. At the beginning of the play, all we know is that this writer, Couturier, who is played by my brother James, has been detained for some reason that he doesn't know. And there are two detectives who have begun to interrogate him about some of the content of some of the stories that he has written, because there have been some child murders in his area, and they think that there might be some kind of connection between those murders and the stories that he's written.
We've got to fill this form out now. It's a form in case anything bad happens to you in custody. Your surname is Couturier, yes?
Yes.
See, we've got your first name is Couturier.
My first name is Couturier.
Your first name is Couturier?
Yes.
And your second name is Couturier?
Yes.
Your name is Couturier and Couturier?
My parents were funny people.
Middle initial.
K.
Your name is Couturier, Couturier, Couturier.
Like I said, my parents were funny people.
Your address is Kevin Ice 4443.
Yes.
Which you share with?
My brother, Michael.
Ah, Michael. At least he's not Couturier.
He's backward, your brother, yeah?
He's not backward, no. He's slow to get things sometimes.
He's slow to get things. Okay.
Next of kin?
My next of kin?
It's just formalities, Couturier. You know what I mean?
Part of the magic of the way he writes is that he's funny. He buoys up these very dark tales with humor. So although it's frightening, the things that are going on are quite frightening, it's very funny along the way. And we've done our best to mine that humor.
Tell us about your roles. Michael and James, you guys play brothers in one of the stories and your brothers in real life.
Yes, this is James, and I play Couturier, who is the writer of these short stories in The Pillow Man. And Michael, my actual real-life brother, plays my brother, whose name is Michael. One of the things that's really interesting about that is a lot of times if you are in a play or in a movie and you get cast to play opposite somebody who is your sibling, there's a lot of work that goes into, you know, making sure your mannerisms are similar or you have, a chemistry that works, you know, making sure that that relationship plays well on stage or on screen. And that is some work that we didn't have to do at all. And so we were able to sort of focus on making these characters as different from ourselves as possible, but also, you know, really just focus on telling the story.
Yes, so this is Michael. In this play, Michael has some learning difficulties, so he goes to a special school, and he's quite dependent on his younger brother to take care of him, which is one of the challenges that's been kind of creeping up for the relationship between us in this play, is that I haven't actually been dependent on my actual brother, but kind of getting into the dynamic of being the dependent one, being the more vulnerable one. He's also described as slow to get things. That kind of makes the dynamic really interesting and gives us more room for creativity than if we were just playing a normal sort of set of older and younger brothers.
Where is the wickedness of the plot when it comes to your characters?
At basically every step along the way, almost every 5 minutes, the audience learns something that they didn't know before, or they get a complete reversal on something that they thought they knew. So there's just so much that I can't really say or that we can't really give away because it would ruin it a bit. But What I can tell you is that there is a lot of darkness in all of the characters in this play, and that there's a lot of redeeming qualities. So they're very human in that way. These characters aren't linear. These characters are very much fleshed out, three-dimensional. And I think that's one of the reasons it's, in my opinion, one of the greatest plays of the last 20 years.
Will this be a challenging work for audiences?
I think it will absolutely be a challenging work for audiences. There are five scenes in the play. It's broken up by fairy tales. So there's a theatrical part of this storytelling, and then there's a very sort of realistic part of the storytelling. There's an interrogation room, and then there's another thing that will happen that is not the interrogation room. That we'll leave that one for you to discover when you come to see this play. But the content is quite dark. It's about abuse in a lot of it, and I think that audiences have to separate themselves from what's going on to be able to get through the evening. That's why it's so important that McDonough has a knack for buoying up the story with humor, because the content is viciously dark. It's a great play for Halloween.
Director Mark Ruthier and actors James Bartel and Michael Joel Bartel, thanks for stopping by.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks so much, Diane.
Give a little time for the child.
The NOLA Project presents Martin McDonagh's The Pillow Men, with performances running now through November 3rd at Lusher's Lionsgate Theater, 5426 Ferret Street. More info at NOLAproject.com. That's our show for this week. Major support for Inside the Arts comes from the Hellas Foundation. Additional support comes from Christwood Retirement Community, the Contemporary Arts Center, and the New Orleans Opera Association. Our program is a production of WWNO and is archived at WWNO.org. I'll be back with more ideas for your artistic palette on Tuesdays at 1 p.m., Wednesdays at 8:30 p.m., and a shortened edition on Thursday mornings at 8:45, when we'll go Inside the Arts. I'm Diane Mack.